Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It has been it has been a summery-like day. Temperatures in the 80s. Lots of sun today. Hopefully the good weather holds on through at least ball game tonight, because we've got a big baseball game on tap over on campus. Auburn hosting South Carolina. We'll talk about that and much more here on the Thursday Drive. Hello, everybody. Bill here. Dan is in as well. And we're sort of flip-flopping our end-of-the-week lineup as Justin Ferguson, who is usually with us on Thursdays, headed over to Atlanta. Looks like should be a good game, a good day to catch Braves action, and could be a pretty good pitching matchup tonight. As it's Schwellenbach and Lodolo tonight in at Truist Field, but Justin is in Atlanta, so we have called on Coach Don Dunn, who's usually with us on Fridays, because we couldn't wait any longer to get a report on his trip to Louisville this past weekend. Don, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Empty pockets, but I'm doing good. Good to be back. It is hot. Woo.
It is. Well, it was that wasn't the weather to be concerned with in Louisville.
No, we had a very muddy track, a muddy day. Like we were talking earlier, my wife and I and some friends got to go out to Churchill Downs on Wednesday and had a very nice time, had a nice a table in the paddock area, which has been redone, if you're familiar with Churchill Downs. And for $130 a ticket, that included a buffet all day. Drinks, water, dessert, fans above us. It was a covered area. TVs everywhere. Could watch the jockeys walk within 10 feet of us going to the paddock.
Yeah.
And my wife had a better day than I did betting. And then Saturday, it was a Mother's Day, and she did better. She bet Mutters. She's a lot smarter than I.
Mother's Day is this weekend, so that's appropriate.
Yeah, but anyway, I usually bet the jockey and try to watch the trainers. I'm not an expert, but
what are you looking for watching the trainers? What do you
the ones that win the most? Say there's a couple that the guy that won is his second Derby.
Sure,
Mott, who's a good trainer. Then you got Brad Cox.
I saw Baffert on the
Baffert was there. I'm not a fan of his.
I saw him on the TV broadcast before, and he mentioned that his horse had never seen mud before, never seen rain,
and that is a problem.
You want to get your horse as ready as possible, but you know some of these guys, whether you're coming from the Middle East or you're coming from California,
Saudi Arabia, like you say, those guys. And you're right, because that mud hits them in the face, and they're not used to it, and they just it's like, I guess, a track guy being behind in the mud, and they don't like that dirt in their face. Some of them love it, so it's all and it's the luck too, you know. But
did you find that with football players? There were some guys that thrived in adverse conditions, and some guys
most
that preferred
guys love playing
most guys
in the mud.
Yeah,
as long as it wasn't cold, freezing. That's awful.
Okay,
when the ground freezes after the cleat marks and. You got all them clots and stuff.
And then you're playing on
I'm
cement
telling my
right
age,
after the, yeah.
You know.
Oh, for sure.
Because, you know, turf, when I was playing, there wasn't turf. But, we had a big time, Bill, and it was fun. Got to saw some of my family and friends, which I see once a year during Derby.
Yeah, and one of the other things you were mentioning was a little bit of inflation over the years. You were about the cost on either Friday or Saturday.
Well, you know, it used to be Friday, the Oaks Day. That's when the fillies, the lady horses run. And they've done a great job for cancer. Everyone wears pink now for women's breast cancer. And they do a neat thing before the race, which is late in the afternoon, usually around 6 o'clock local time. All the people that have had cancer and survived – they walk around the track. It's really neat.
Wow.
And there's hundreds and hundreds of them. Very emotional. And but anyway, when that,
does the first one to finish get a – it's not a race.
No, they don't go all the way around. I think they walk – that would be a long
–
Yeah, that would be
– Can you bet on –
Seabiscuit.
Yeah. Can you bet on that?
Yeah, you probably can bet on anything in Louisville. But anyway,
it was the exact kind of finish you wanted for the Derby too, mm-hmm. right? A stretch run between two horses,
yep.
neck and neck, and
the favorite and kind of an unknown. And, journalism was a favorite, and he was right there at the end.
Yeah, so. And Sovereignty, as I like to call him, Sovereignty was he was among the top. Horses on
and
the board.
He was ridden by Junior Alvarado, who I bet all year. I have an account. My wife and I with Twin Spires. We bet $2 almost every Saturday on a race leading up to the Derby. There's usually a big race. But like Bill was saying, I'll be quiet and let somebody else talk. But when I was in high school, I graduated. I'm telling my age again. 1971. And I started going in 1969, my junior, sophomore year, whatever. $3 to get in the infield. When I went to college, came back, they raised it to $5. We thought, how in the heck are we going to afford this? Then they raised it to $10, and we really struggled. And now it's $150 to get in the infield on Derby Day to get in the infield, and that does not guarantee anything. And
no.
You got bathrooms, you got betting winnings, and you got to take a chair. But you can't take anything else in. You can't take coolers. Umbrellas, anything like that.
If you're going to a horse, if you're going to a track for the first time to bet the ponies, where should you want to sit? And like, what in general, what sort of like, what would be your tips?
Okay,
for someone's like first day at the races.
I've been very fortunate. I went to the Preakness in Baltimore when I was at Texas Tech with Coach Tuberville because we were Under Armour.
Yeah,
and he got invited. Because you know they brought all the armor. That's where the armor under guy lives.
Oh, the corporate parties
Kevin,
at the
whatever
at the Triple Crown.
Yeah,
the corporate parties are legendary.
Had the big tent. That was a great track. But I mean, I was blessed. But if I'm going to Churchill Downs, I'm going to go during the week. Like tonight on Thursdays, they have night racing. $2 to get in. $2 beverages. Live bands. It's more for the young people.
Sure,
to get the college kids. Food trucks, you can walk anywhere you want.
Oh, that's a
now,
good
you
time.
Can't get up into Millionaire's Row, but you can go out to the track.
General admission,
into
basically,
the paddock, everywhere. But I always like to go around the paddock because you can see the horses come in. You don't realize how huge they are on Derby Day. And then the jockeys and everything. It just it's a bucket list thing. You got to have a lot of money to go to Derby. But you can always go to the museum during the week. There's a lot you can do during the week, and they make it more reasonable. But Derby Week, it's
and Louisville's a cool city too.
Yeah,
I mean, there's stuff to, there's stuff to see and stuff
got,
to experience.
They got got the Bat Factory.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's awesome. You got the horse farms. You got all the distilleries within 2 hours. The Bourbon Trail, and a lot of good stuff.
Well, that's great. Sounds like we were worried about you, wondering about it when we saw the weather. Wondered if you were caught in that. So that's great.
But it worked out good. And then what I do now on Saturdays, I haven't been inside Churchill Downs on Derby Day in probably 5 years. I have a buddy, an old guy that owns a house right on First Street.
That's what we were wondering if you still had that.
And they had the big Jumbotron. I backed the car in, raised the back, watched a couple races on a jump tailgate, and I've never tailgated in my life. So I'm getting better at that, except I didn't take any food this year. I'm an idiot. So we stayed there for a couple of races, but it was, like you say, Bill, it was pouring down rain, and we looked at each other and said, let's go back to the house, make us a mint julep and watch it on TV.
Oh, that's great. Well, good to have you back here with us.
It's good to be back.
And
thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where a lot of folks would love to be able to do something like that.
And Donna wore a little fascinator. She had a new dress on Wednesday. I wore shorts and I had my Derby shirt on, but it was fun.
So I've heard that and I've heard comparisons to Augusta in this regard, where there are folks who. Like they have houses.
Oh yeah,
and it's just they pay off the house
exactly
with renting seasonally around this event.
My best friend, who we stay with, the guy behind him in a very old neighborhood in Louisville, left a week ago Sunday before the Derby, took his family to Florida, rented his whole house out, paid for his vacation and his mortgage for a year.
Yeah.
He's done it every year.
I met a fellow years ago, and his family had purchased three houses on a street in Augusta,
mm-hmm.
and they rent. You know, they got in and they got in with a golf team.
Yeah,
and they pay off those houses and a little bit more.
Easy,
just renting them to the golf teams that don't want to, because some of these people don't want to stay in a hotel.
Right.
Like if it's
most
a large,
of the pro guys.
The pro guys don't want you because
right.
I mean, between,
they want their families there.
They want their families. Exactly. They want access to a kitchen
and their routine
dietary. Yeah, yes. they need to be able to have, and so. I mean, this predates like Airbnb and companies that sort of had in places like, and I've heard Louisville is a town with some of that, and Augusta to this day still has, I mean there are, the master's houses, just houses that you'll golf teams will come and rent out for the month leading up to the event and maybe the week of the event too.
Yeah, I got one more. I need, my bucket list is to go to the final race of the Triple Crown. You know, there's the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. The Belmont this year is being run in Saratoga because they're redoing the track.
Okay.
Saratoga's beautiful up in New York. I want to always go to Saratoga, but I doubt I'll make it this year. But knock on wood, I'd like to make that trip so I can have all three under my belt.
Is there anything outside of horse racing as far as a sporting event you'd like to
I've never been to a World Series, even though my cousins got to go when the Reds were there years ago. I'd like to go to Stanley Cup.
So SEC Media Days this year is the same week in Atlanta as the All-Star game. The MLB All-Star game is Tuesday night.
Be fun.
Second year in a row that Media Days is in the same town as the All-Star game, same week. That means Home Run Derby on Monday night.
Wow.
And now they do the draft on Sunday night. So it's the MLB draft on Sunday night, Home Run Derby Monday, All-Star game Tuesday, all centered in Atlanta.
Home Run Derby
would be fun. I suppose if you have like a rooting interest, right? Like
home
if you
run
had
derby
somebody
would be cool anyway. I mean,
okay,
it doesn't matter to me if it's
All-Star game. If it was one or the other, I would pick the All-Star game. I think to go to one or the other, I think I'd rather go to the All-Star game. But Home Run Derby is probably a little bit more of a party.
Yeah.
And more of the players are on the field, sort of sell, filming it themselves.
Well, a friend of mine.
I guess you can bet on it, like horse racing.
His son
went years
ago and said it was great because the players were much more approachable.
Yeah.
I think the
All-Star,
Derby.
I mean, even though the All-Star game is also fun, the players are competing a little bit more. They're a little bit more in competitive. I mean,
well, you got
so many
guys there with their kids.
Sure. It's an actual baseball game on Tuesday. Yeah. Monday night, it's a Home Run Derby, which is cool, but it's still like that's a Home Run Derby. But no, I think either of those things would be cool.
Final Four, I was lucky years ago, Bill and I have talked about this, in Louisville at Freedom Hall, my grandmother just entered a lottery. And won, and we got to go. That's when they used to play on Friday, Saturday. And Lou Alcindor back then was playing in it. Dayton Don May, another great player long ago. Mm-hmm. And I got Lou Alcindor's autograph, and I can't find it.
Wow!
But he signed it, Lou Alcindor, before he became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. And he was so nice. We were just wandering around. I was probably seventh grade, maybe. And they sent us out in a cab, which we'd never been in a cab, two young boys, and we were just running around like maniacs.
I was at a UCLA game when Kareem showed up one time, just like, I guess it hadn't been advertised or anything, just was going to receive an award and talk to the TV commentary team. And, I mean, it was like, and I guess this is timely, like it was like the Pope walked in.
Oh yeah,
like when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, walked through the tunnel and people realized like that's Kareem. Like you might as well have blown.
Yeah, there's no mistaking.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
That's the other thing. Is that it's clearly
like when you saw Bill Walton, there's a guy at 7 feet.
Clearly, it's clearly Kareem. And you probably could have. I mean, I don't know if they stopped the game for a moment, but they probably should have.
Oh yeah,
it's like all right, it's a long like no one's paying attention to the court right now.
He was walking
around
the bottom of Freedom Hall. I don't know how we ended up down there. My cousin and I, we were running around like maniacs, you know, probably getting in trouble. And he was walking out, and he gave us an autograph. Nice man.
See now there are stories in the Jeff Pearlman Lakers book that he was at times surly to autograph seekers or rival fans.
A lot of
fans.
Athletes sort of
change
sour.
Yeah,
sour on it after a while when they feel like some people feel like the players should always. You know,
and I think with Kareem, the fact that he's noticeable and he can't just put on a baseball hat and sunglasses and blend in like someone else is a little bit different.
But, you know, he was still in college then, so he was very, very nice. And we were two young nuts. We didn't.
Yeah, and he
probably didn't know who he was.
Super gracious when I got to see him. But it was neat to. And by the way, not I mean it's a sports show, but. American Pope.
How about that?
Chicago guy. Yeah, Villanova
and a
grad.
Bears fan, Villanova grad. Yeah. We got it covered.
Yeah, we get. I mean, it's a guy who's like a Pope who's been to Wrigley Field.
You could have won some money on that.
Yeah,
last night they were talking. No way.
Yeah, Shay, congrats, Leo.
Yeah,
to Leo.
Be a lot of Leos this year.
The new Pope. How about that?
All right, we're just underway. As you can tell, we can go in a lot of different directions.
We've got the Dylan interview, right? Are we running that today?
We're going to run it tomorrow.
We're running it tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah, because Jacob ran it today.
Okay.
on the line. So
we have a Dylan interview. That's exciting.
Yeah, we can run some Butch Thompson.
Okay.
Because the baseball as the Tigers
tonight.
Get ready for South Carolina in a big series.
Ooh, yes.
But we're wide open. Love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Don, Drew at the controls, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in as we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. .com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, Drew at the controls. Don in today. Justin Ferguson going to be checking out the Braves game tonight. And he will be in tomorrow. As we mentioned, a big, big series coming up. It looks like beautiful weather for the opener tonight over at Plainsman Park. Auburn hosting South Carolina. Tigers looking for their seventh win in 9 SEC series. I mean, that's really impressive. Only Auburn and Texas have won at least 6 of their 8 series.
And Auburn, because of the two series losses being sweeps, right? Like that's
right.
What, you know, sort of prevents the win-loss record from, you know, from being even a little bit better when you point out that Auburn has won 7 of their 9.
You figure, if you've won 6 of 8, you're probably, 15-9 or something right now, and Auburn's 13-11.
But Auburn still looks like they're in excellent position for hosting postseason play, at least in the first round. And if they can take care of business this week and next week, they're in pretty good. They're in pretty good shape for the to be a top 8 national seed.
Oh yeah,
and host potentially in the first 2 rounds before advancing to Omaha if they go that far. So I think you're in the catbird seat right now. You're where you want to be. It would be great to be closer to the very top of the conference, I suppose. You know what I mean? To be like in the race for the regular season title or something. But absent that, like, this has been a triumphant regular season, and Auburn, is in position to. And that's really what you're shooting for in college baseball, right? As a major conference team, is the thought of can you host some postseason games? And because otherwise you're playing spoiler, you're going on the road to unfamiliar territory. You can still win. We've seen teams as a 2-3 seed or a 3 seed advance out of the regional round, advance to the super regional. I mean, Ole Miss was the last team in and won it all a couple of years ago. But Auburn would be. Would be well suited to be able to accomplish hosting some postseason games. What a turnaround!
Yeah, it's more beneficial to be playing at home, especially now that you have an even bigger home field advantage with the with the additions over at Plainsman Park. So, I mean, Auburn is in everybody's top 10. But I think they need to win at least four of the next six to have a good shot of being in the national top eight. So, I mean, they're in great shape to host a regional. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament, but they have an opportunity, if they play well, to be able to be a national top eight seed. And that's crazy. Auburn could be a top eight national seed and finish no higher than sixth in the SEC. I mean, because the league is that tough. And again,
well, how many of the top eight national seeds could be SEC teams?
Five or six.
That's so someone's got to be fifth, yeah. And someone's got to be sixth.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it sounds crazy, but I mean, you don't have to be in the top four, obviously, to be a top eight national seed.
I believe Vanderbilt is the sixth highest ranked SEC team in the coaches poll right now, and they're 10th.
Yes.
Right. So I mean, you got six SEC teams in the top 10.
Yeah, Auburn's
in college baseball.
Right,
Auburn's fifth. So I mean, I would say there are, and the list might be a little bit bigger. I'd say there are probably 11 or 12 teams right now that feel like they're in good position to be one of those eight, or in position to be one of those eight. Auburn's one of them, and Auburn's probably in better position than.
Well, you know what? On one of the projections that I saw just a couple of days ago, it had. How many teams made the NCAA men's basketball tournament?
From the SEC?
Yeah.
12? 12, right? Or was it 13?
I was thinking it was 13.
Maybe it was 13 with Texas. Well, yeah, because the play-in game. Maybe it got to 13.
Well, I saw a projection, I think it was D1 baseball, that had 14 SEC teams in.
Wow.
Because right now, you have three teams tied for 12th. So 12th, 13th, and 14th in the SEC are 10 and 14 in the league. I mean, that's how,
and they've been playing better, and
it has been. Mississippi State swept this past weekend to get to 10 wins.
The bottom of the league has been playing better.
Yes, they have.
That's it.
And then Texas A&M started 1-8. They were your preseason number one team. They started 1-8. They're now 10 and 14. So, I mean, there's a good possibility that a dozen SEC teams are going to be in the postseason. So it's once again the SEC dominating
I'm trying to think who did everyone make it but LSU and South Carolina.
Was it 14?
Maybe it was 14.
I thought it was 14.
Maybe it was 12.
Right.
Maybe it was 12
because,
in the
because I'm yes. hearing possibly you're seeing possibly 14, and that would match, I believe, the basketball.
Yes, you had like there were teams on the was it Texas was in the play-in game.
Yeah,
but other than that, you had 14 SEC teams in the NCAA, which is four. And what's the likelihood of 14 in baseball?
Again, your 14th team right now has got 10 wins.
Yeah.
10 and 14. If they can, you know, I've got to look at this. Let me look at the schedules and see who everybody has left. But if these teams split their last six games, 13 and 17 usually get you in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say. I mean, we did, and we knew. I mean, the SEC was already getting double-digit teams in, and then you added Texas and Oklahoma, yep. who perennially make it. So it was in the possibility.
Texas has led the league for all season.
And you raised the difficulty of the entire league when you added Texas and Oklahoma. And now, I think it's. I don't think a team is going to be disqualified just because they're the 14th SEC team. Like if they have a resume that merits tournament inclusion, the committee's not going to say, "Well, we've reached our limit." Of teams from the SEC, and I think we've seen that reflected in some of these other sports. When 14 SEC teams make the NCAA tournament, because 14 SEC teams deserved a spot in the NCAA tournament.
And two of them in the Final Four.
That's right.
And a national champion.
Half of them in the Elite Eight, half of the Elite Eight from the SEC, with Tennessee and Alabama not advancing. So.
All right, the three teams that are tied right now for 12th at 10 and 14 are Kentucky, Mississippi State, Texas A&M. All three of those teams are home this weekend. Kentucky hosts Oklahoma, Mississippi State hosts Ole Miss, and Texas A&M's got Missouri. So A&M likes the way things look there for next week. A&M is at Georgia, so yeah, they need to see if they can sweep Missouri. Mississippi State is at Missouri next weekend.
Golly.
And then Kentucky is at Vandy. There's a chance. There is a pretty decent chance that all these teams can go at least 3-3.
Now, is there a shot at 15?
I don't know. No, South Carolina's 5-19.
Okay, so 14.
South Carolina's 5-19. No, South Carolina's and then Missouri's 0-24.
Right. So South Carolina, and Missouri have played their way.
They're going to be in the SEC tournament, so there is a chance.
Yeah.
There's a chance.
But not as an at-large.
Would that be something?
That would be.
I'd have to say that'd be fixed.
Well, it's single elimination, too. They moved the SEC baseball tournament to single elimination. Yeah. And everybody's in.
Right. If two teams are at the bottom, like South Carolina and Missouri, like it gives the other teams a chance to pick up a lot of wins.
Yep.
And I think
that's what Auburn's hoping for this weekend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we get a chance,
13 or 14 absolutely on the table.
Oh, it absolutely does. All right, we'll let you hear some of the comments from Butch Thompson sometime here in the show. We'd love to hear from you though. Anything you want to talk about sports wise, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break here on the Thursday Drive.
At ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, and we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, we started off getting caught up on Don's trip up to Louisville to the Kentucky Derby.
Yep.
And, we've done this a few times, but, it's sort of fun, too. Are there you asked Don if he had any, because you mentioned bucket list type things. It's fun to think about, some events that you'd like to get to.
You had a Final Four this year?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I've been to a Final Four. I've been to a Super Bowl. I've been to a World Series.
Oh, really?
Which Super Bowl did you go to?
The first one, it was in Atlanta.
Okay. Was that the John Elway?
Yes.
Elway
and was that John? Was that
no? No. Well, I thought it was. Yeah,
Was it the Rams? Was it the?
No, I went. Maybe it wasn't the first one in Atlanta, but it was one. Yeah, it was definitely Broncos because it was a lot of orange and blue there.
So you had the clothes if you wanted to wear them.
Yeah. Well, we were able to get some tickets because we carried. We had an affiliation with the Falcons in Montgomery and just were able to get some deals going in and doing did a couple of shows over there the week of, and that was cool. The fan experience things there next door was really neat. So
I would love to go to a Stanley Cup Game 7, but that'd be a tough ticket. I would imagine.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, all those tickets.
Do you have a hockey team, or would you just want to be there for the?
I love hockey. Being a Southern guy.
Okay.
I used to go years when I was coaching at Auburn. We would always try to go to the Cottonmouths, which I thought was one of the greatest names in sports. Now they're the River Dragons. The minor league. Mm-hmm. Probably my favorite. I've always liked the New York Rangers for some reason. In fact, I've been to a game at Madison Square Garden, just a regular season game, when we went up to visit Army, talking football back when they were really good on defense. This is 20 years ago.
That
never been to a professional hockey
game. Oh, is that right? You never been to a pro hockey game? Wow, no, NHL games are fun. I've seen the Lightning in a couple of different venues. The old Thunderdome, which was the Trop.
Oh yeah.
And then the new one, the Tampa Bay Times Forum, the Ice Palace, whatever they, So I've been a couple of Lightning games and saw the Ducks a couple of times down in Southern California.
Years ago, I saw Gretzky in L.A.
Yeah,
out there. I think I was speaking at one of the old Glazer football clinics, and I always looked at who's in town. And I spoke one time in Chicago when I was at Auburn, and the Blackhawks were in town, but it was standing room only, and the ticket was like $150. Wow. So I just watched it on TV.
That Messier, like Rangers team, like 30 years ago. That
I'm talking thing about was Ron Duguay.
That 90s, Mike Richter.
Yeah.
You know, in goal. You know,
those, Avery and all
that team.
Guys.
And I think it was because of the Messier guarantee. And I think it being New York had a lot to do with it, too.
They hadn't won one.
They
guaranteed it. Yeah.
That permeated culture in a way like hockey rarely does, like now, where you know, a guy like Mark Messier became something of a household name, you know, in the 90s, at least among casual sports fans, or even, you know, he's the kind of guy who could, like, do walk-on appearances on sitcoms, and people would be like, oh, it's Mark Messier.
I don't know if you remember the old guy, Ron Duguay, one of the last guys never to wear a helmet. He had the real long hair flowing around. Now, I mean, I think it's mandatory you have to wear a helmet.
I think they grandfathered in the guys who were, you know, they didn't want to make anybody start, but I think they grandfathered in for all the new players.
Yeah.
It was like chewing tobacco in baseball. Yeah. It was like they let the guys keep doing it, but
exactly.
Discouraging any new players from doing it.
That would be fun. But like Bill said, none of these games are cheap.
Ooh. Oh, nothing is anymore.
No, I mean, but yeah, you've got that Final Four knocked out. That's great.
Yeah, it would have been nice, you know, it would have been nice to stick around a little
longer. Yeah, but just to get there, it's tough.
Yeah, you're right. It's tough. In more ways than one.
Yeah.
I mean, and Auburn is a program, I mean, having two in the last six NCAA tournaments. I mean, Auburn's been there more regularly than just about anybody else. And then the question is, you know, will Bruce Pearl be able to take, you know, his team to a third Final Four anytime soon? Obviously, this team rebuilding and starting over with almost an entirely new roster. We'll see what Todd Pettiford decides to do. But if Todd returns, he's the only contributor back from last year. But it's a brand new SEC. You know, practically the entire league is starting over with just a little bit of what they had last year, or maybe none at all.
It's amazing.
And so I think it's even footing. You know, compared to like last year, there were some teams in Auburn's position right now, teams that had to go get basically their entire roster in the transfer portal. Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Pope shows up Arkansas. Calipari leaves Kentucky and goes to Arkansas after Eric Musselman leaves. And Arkansas's got an entirely new roster. Calipari has to go assemble it. Mm-hmm. Kentucky, some of those players that Calipari goes and gets were formerly Kentucky players. Mark Pope shows up. He's got to build a new roster. But you had to face teams in the SEC, you know, Arkansas and Kentucky had to do that with teams like Tennessee and Alabama and Florida and Auburn
that had a lot more experience.
Returning contributors. Mm-hmm. I think it's much more of even footing around the league this year.
Oh, I agree.
You don't have was there a coaching change in the? I'm trying to remember if there was a coaching change in men's basketball in the SEC this year, but the McMahon's still there, and
A&M.
Oh, that's right. Buzz Williams left,
and
Bucky took over from Samford, and Bucky in Texas feels appropriate too, right? There's an endorsement. Yeah. there's an endorsement deal to be had with our guy.
Yeah, we were fired up driving to Louisville. Now there's you leave Auburn with the Buckies. You got one now in Smithfield, Kentucky, which is right outside of Bowling Green. So, and then you got the one in Athens right before you get into Tennessee.
Right, so you're well covered.
Oh yeah,
you're well covered just follow the path.
Yeah.
But so I mean, with an SEC where, I mean, even though there aren't really any new I mean, there's Bucky, but most of the coaches are back.
Yep.
But so much of the league is going to rely on
new
production.
New faces.
They can't lean on what they have coming back, and that. You know, I mean, I think it's
some of them, like you said, still don't know who's coming back.
They still don't.
Their names in the it's still in the draft,
including Auburn. I mean Todd Pettiford is still.
It's got to be heart wrenching too.
You know, the interesting thing now we were talking about it with possibilities for Auburn's last spot for somebody inside. Is there anybody who is in the NBA draft who is also in the portal? Who also entered the portal that could be somebody? Of course, I mean, if NIL was a problem with James Scott, I wonder if there'd be somebody that that was thinking about, you know, the NBA draft that pulled out that would be viable. I just don't know if that'd be the case.
That's a great question.
Yeah, I'll take a look and see, like, if there's a list of early entry draft candidates who have retained their college eligibility who could be in the portal. Maybe Auburn has their eye on somebody like that. Although we've mentioned before, like, when you have a presumptive starter at center and a presumptive starter at power forward trying to fill out the other 15 or 20 minutes is a tougher sell than when you have a big hole at that position and you can just say, hey, you know, you can come in and be our and I know they you know, Keyshawn Hall can play the three, and so you could, if there were a starter caliber player at the four or the five, you could in theory start that guy and slide Murphy to the four and Hall to the three, and then what, Bashir and Tahad? So I mean,
you could
do that if you wanted to. I don't know if I, you know,
but to sell, you're right. It'd be tough to be able to sell that. But I just wanted.
I would have tried that.
That thought just hit me when you were talking about that. It's like, oh, you know, maybe there's somebody out there. I don't know. That sort of and just bouncing things from sport to sport. I did see a note on Carlos Moore, the big offensive lineman,
yeah,
from Elon, who I don't believe has done anything unless he did in the last 24 hours and I missed it. But he was going to visit, I believe, Maryland, which is basically his hometown school. And he also pointed out in an interview that they have a couple of openings at offensive tackle. And he said he loved his time at Auburn, yeah, but he sees playing time at Maryland.
Yeah,
so he hasn't made a decision, but I'd say that one, very similar to what you were talking about with Auburn in the front court, tough to bring in a third offensive tackle with, you know, selling
third.
Him on, well, at best.
I mean, if Tuttle wasn't back, I'd say third.
Yeah.
But when you have
Tuttle, I mean, there's been talk about maybe he'll get a look at guard too. But how many guards do you need? But I mean, yeah. So to convince someone to come in and be here, so that you'll have somebody next year, yeah, as opposed to playing closer to home and possibly stepping right in as a starter. So I'd say it doesn't look very likely that Auburn's going to add him. Maybe not add anybody else in the transfer portal, football wise.
No, and I would think Auburn. Obviously they've put a sizable bet on the two incoming transfers at tackle, right? Chaplin and Murphy feel like starters at left and right tackle if they're both available, through for spring camp, you know, for fall camp and for the first game. If either of them couldn't go, I mean, Tuttle's played a lot of tackle. Dylan Wade, although he could be one of your starting guards, Dylan Wade is always available to slide over and play more tackle, and he's done a lot of it in his college football career. I don't think the door is closed, Bill, on Tyler Johnson's college football career.
No, I don't either. I think they still really like the possibilities for him.
And then there's your various there's Seth Wilford, who I know Jason mentioned yesterday.
Jason said yesterday he had a good spring.
You know, and is I think being looked at more as a guard by this coaching staff now, but was a top tackle coming out of junior college. Like, to me, that's a, like you said, it's almost 2020. And what a luxury to be able to think about, well, you're more in the plans for 2026,
yeah,
when you're talking about guys that you're targeting in the spring portal. Because you remember 2 years ago, Bill, like
anybody they could find, yeah, you can start.
Yeah, and it wasn't about give us a little bit now and give us a lot, yeah, next year because we're good at your position. You didn't feel that way virtually anywhere. And again, like if you wanted to see like a reason to feel like this season could be more ideal than the first two for Hugh Freeze, I would look at the fact that this spring, as far as player movement and especially player acquisition, you haven't had to be nearly as busy in the spring portal.
Oh, no, not at all.
As you were in the last two, which I think reflects confidence in the roster. Mm-hmm. The fact that, I mean, in that first year, you had to frantically go find whoever you could that you thought could help you. And in year two, you were still addressing. This time last year,
Hey, Auburn got Keandre Lambert Smith in the
Keron Crawford.
Yep.
I mean some big names.
Dorian Mousey,
absolutely.
I mean, look at they needed those guys.
Yes, guys who played a lot joined the team in after spring practice last year, and that's I think the fact that Auburn really has. I mean we'll see what happens with the linebacker from Maryland. We'll see what happens with Pleasant. Right, like maybe Auburn went and found somebody, Jay Hardy. Like there could be somebody who contributes a lot on this year's on this year's team who joined the team in the spring. But you look at the Bill Cameron depth chart right now, and it's hardly.
Yeah, there weren't just gaping holes there where somebody had to be able to step in. Now, if they do step in, what a great situation that is, because then you already felt like you had somebody that could play.
So if you're looking for Well, what's going to be different about this upcoming season? This is a difference between this season and the last couple for Hugh Freeze, as far as the lack of activity and the lack of need for activity to address problems on the depth chart and the roster in the spring window.
Yeah, so I mean,
is that fair to say?
Like, no, I mean, I think it's very fair. I mean. I've said multiple times, I think the pieces are there. Now let's see if they can put them together.
I don't want to generalize too much, and Coach, if you're building your roster in the spring, you're in trouble. Like if you're
behind.
Yeah,
at best you're behind.
In college, in college basketball, you can build your roster after the NCAA tournament, and you're just like hundreds of other teams.
Right.
In college football, especially major conference college football, if those pieces aren't, like, if they haven't been installed a long time ago and you're shopping for them now, yeah, like Bill said, you're behind, and usually it's going to lead to you being behind, like, on the scoreboard in the fall. You're going to be behind in the standings
is not good.
That's where you're going to end up.
Tough.
And so for Auburn not to have to go do that this spring to me is got to be
positive.
It feels like it has to be a positive.
Yeah, no doubt.
Ooh. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in with anything that's on your mind sports wise here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. It has been a beautiful day in Auburn today. Very warm. This is great weather for baseball, though. Absolutely great weather for baseball. Hopefully a big crowd is preparing to gather over at Sanford Stadium, Hitchcock Field at Plainsman Park, as Auburn and South Carolina about to start a three-game series. It will be Cam Tilley on the mound for the Tigers tonight. Then they will go with their ace tomorrow in Samuel Dutton. And then Christian Chatterton will get the start on Saturday. I'm going to call Samuel Dutton Samuel, like Andy mentioned to us on Tuesday.
Is that the deal?
he asked him.
Samuel.
He said, some people call you Sam, some call you Samuel. What do you prefer? And Dutton said, well, my mom calls me Samuel.
Okay.
So Andy said, well, that's good enough for me. You're Samuel now. So now, of course, when my mother called me William, I was in trouble.
Yes.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like,
your real name, Bill, you're in trouble.
That would have been my next question. But, of course, Andy wouldn't have done that. My next question would have been, Is that when she's mad at you, or just all the time?
Your full name usually when they
Oh yes. I mean, that was serious.
Yeah, the middle name,
if
you're done.
The middle name came out,
you're done.
And your backside was already starting to hurt.
Go get a switch.
Far be it for me to disagree with Andy Burcham about these things, and it's, you know, it's a matter of style, but my policy in my limited time doing play by play in these situations is I want to know what the other what players call it. I want to know what the team and the coaches call someone in that situation, because I imagine
you know what, in baseball, though? Now, it's different in basketball.
It
in
is.
In baseball, it seems like teammates pick a one-syllable.
Duddy.
And it's an E at the end. Yeah. It'd be Sammy, and it'd be Duddy.
Duddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be, because it's usually the last name with an E.
Yeah. Oh, I would call.
The
I
first
would,
syllable of the last name and an E.
That's right. That's funny. And I would call.
You'd be Pecky, you'd be Dunny.
I would call Samuel Dutton Duddy without question if it was a
absolutely.
Teammate. And we may, and that may become his informal nickname on the drive for the rest of the season. We'll see. But Samuel is pitching tomorrow for Auburn.
We can ask Derek.
What he calls Duddy?
Yes. Yeah. All right. So anyway, that's coming up. That's coming up this evening. We'd love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise here in hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com.
I kind of like Pecky. That never really took off. I'm okay with that. Yeah,
is a baseball kind of thing. I mean, yeah. Baseball always is like something-y. It's a two syllable. Two syllable.
There is another. I don't know if I've told the story in there. I know we got a caller hanging on, but there is a Dan Peck already in the Writers Guild. I found this out when I was in Los Angeles, and so when I had something that was going to maybe get me guild representation, I was going to have to decide what the name was going to be for the paperwork and things. And no, I thought about all kinds of things. I thought about Peck Daniels. Daniel Allen Peck, the full name with the, I'd considered all kinds of options, but Pecky, and then a last name would be on the list too.
334-321
The Dan Peck in the Guild writes for American Dad, so sometimes you'll see him on the
text. That was for you. 334-321-1390
Can't say that one on the air. And that in fact was the nickname, yeah. Tex. So
yeah.
Your suspicion is correct.
Yeah. We will get to the phone. Who have we got there, Drew?
John
is up first. Hey, John.
Hey guys. Dan Peck in the Guild sounds like somebody that would have played Thursday nights at the supper club.
Well, he would have been there.
That's
He was there Thursday night.
Yeah,
I don't know about playing.
I'd have thrown a drink at him.
Right. Hey, I was just going to say, baseball, you know, is a game of numbers. Like, you know, 61 homers by Maris, 400 batting average, 56-game hitting streak. I'll tell you another number that I don't know if we're talking about enough here in Auburn, is 16 wins in the conference. Because it seems like Auburn went through a drought of about 10 years where we didn't have a winning record in the conference. And I think since Coach Baird retired, it may have happened 5 times that we had a winning record in conference, Auburn did, and maybe 3 times since Renfro. And my question was, Auburn had limitations with, you know, Hope Scholarship, Georgia, things of that nature. In the era of NIL, is that something where systemically Auburn baseball has a higher ceiling now or a lower floor? Or just kind of wanted y'all's thoughts on that.
No, I think you're right. I do think that NIL has evened things up much more. I mean, the way that Auburn was hoping, for things to be able to be evened up with the schools that had Hope scholarships or, you know, had lotteries that were able to give players full scholarships.
Although, I would point out that it's not as though Auburn has enjoyed, you know, nothing but consistent success in the NIL era in baseball, and all of those other programs also have NIL. Like those programs that have the scholarship advantage, they also have the benefit of NIL for their players.
They do.
I've wondered, as we await news on the settlement, you know, could be another week or so. But I've wondered about the impact of making baseball a full scholarship sport. right? Putting everyone on full scholarship, mm-hmm. and how that could, you know, because that was always something that I heard impacted the non-lottery states, the states that couldn't make up the difference with academic scholarships as easily. I always heard that was a hindrance to Auburn and Alabama.
And Bill, I had a question for you as well, because you'll remember this era very well. I'm not saying Dan wouldn't, but you know, I was good buddies with Coach Renfro and his family when they were in town here, and I feel like, just personality wise, I feel like Butch reminds me so much of Steve in the way he kind of leads that team, and just wondered, you know, it seemed like a dearth of leadership for a while, but Auburn baseball is in great shape right now.
No, you're right. I mean, Butch Thompson, Steve Renfro, Hal Baird. I mean, those similar types of leaders. Looking here, I mean, Auburn's looking at if they win three more, if they just split, they've got 16 conference wins. That'd be the third time in the last 4 years that they've hit the 16-win mark. And would be the fourth time under Butch.
I think my first week working with Bill was the week Renfro was let go, and sort of the firestorm of because it was not a universally celebrated decision.
No, not at all.
I would say that's probably like summer 04 sounds right. And and that's I vividly remember that. I did not work with Coach Renfro very much. Heard very nice things about him from people who did. I think you're onto something with the leadership. When I would mention that, all right, well, Auburn's had, you know, two of the last 4 years is, you know, have been disappointing, and if Auburn struggles this year, you know, might have to have uncomfortable conversations about what to do. The reason those are uncomfortable conversations is because you don't feel like you're going to go get someone better than Butch.
Yeah, of course, like, it would be two of the last five, because I mean, 2022 and 2023. 2021 was a bet, was an off
right.
year. So 22 and 23, Auburn was pretty darn good. So last year they were down.
Right, and so if Auburn had struggled this year,
it would have been 3 of 5.
It would have been 3 of 5, which is where you start saying, well, what's the direction of the program? What do things look like? But like I said, the reason they would be uncomfortable conversations is because you still feel like this guy is. You still feel like you should have the utmost confidence in the job that Butch is going to do as a college baseball coach.
And the last point I'll make just real quick is, you know, 2025 was a test because, I may be wrong here, but this was one of his only successful seasons, very successful seasons, without having, like, Steve Smith or Tim Hudson as pitching coach. And it was, I think this was really a key season to do something well without either of those men.
You know, he was... I think that's probably correct, right? As far as I don't have the exact dates of when Steve was with the team, but I mean that's and I think that's probably right. I mean, Butch also still gets a lot of the credit.
Butch is the ultimate of the. I mean, he's got multiple with Scott Foxhall, and they've got quite the triumvirate, I believe, there as far as pitchers. But Butch has always been a pitching. You know, a pitching guy.
And it's like when a football coach, you know, makes his bones on one side of the ball or the other and then becomes a head coach. Right? Like when you have someone who's like a head coach who was formerly an offense coordinator or defense coordinator, you can only put so much heat on the coordinator on that side of the ball.
Yeah.
Because it's still ultimately like and I think Auburn is a great example right now. Like you can pressure the co-coordinators when things aren't going well on offense, but ultimately the buck stops with the head coach. And I think that was also true, you know, for I think in good times and bad times, that was true of the pitching under Butch Thompson. Like it was, I mean, he was ultimately, I think the one who, like as much as you could point to any pitching coach, he was the one who was going to be calling the shots.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate the call, John, 334-321-1390. Auburn and South Carolina. Don't forget, you can hear all of the action over on Wings 94.3, 5:45, the airtime tonight and tomorrow, and then 2:15 is the airtime for a 2:30 start on Saturday. Weather looks pretty good. I mean, looks fine for tonight and looks pretty good for tomorrow. Saturday is probably the biggest concern.
I wonder if Tim Hudson is done as a college coach or moving up in the world of. I mean, he's
that's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I know he left for the he's Lee Scott, right? And he's and still doing a great job. Or was he? Is it? Or
I stepped. No,
that's right. He was at Lee Scott. He left.
Lee Scott was there for his son.
Left to take the Lee Scott job. Right. Yeah. Wonder if he's wonder what Tim Hudson could end up doing. You know, with the
he still comes and is around the team he's not an officially part of the staff or anything, but it's not like he's a stranger over there either.
No, great.
He's still around at practice and comes by as well. So yeah, I wonder if he wants to just maybe he doesn't want to spend that much time doing it.
Great,
I don't know.
Great baseball mind.
Oh, yeah.
did very well for himself as a player and still a young guy. So I think it'd be cool to see whatever he ends up wanting to do because we heard really good things about him during his time coaching before he left for that Lee Scott job.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. We've got some Butch Thompson audio that we can get to, but we'd love to hear from you if you want to give us a call, 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive.
The TN 106.7.
Welcome back. Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan, Coach Don Dunn in the house. Coach, you going to be on the smoker?
Yes, sir.
This weekend. Graduation weekend.
Yeah, it should be busy. I noticed we had a few things today and be anxious tonight when I go in. Usually a good weekend for us. Then Mother's Day Sunday, too.
Mother's Day Sunday as well, yeah.
Don't forget that, guys.
Don't forget.
That'll get you in trouble. Woo.
No, but it's so should be a busy weekend around the Auburn-Opelika area with the graduation festivities. Most of the exams over by now, I'd say. I mean,
today was the last day, right, of exams? They go through tomorrow.
For some reason, I thought they went through Friday.
I guess maybe they do.
Maybe that's wrong, but
what
a bummer.
You hate to have that last
Friday. Yeah, what a bummer.
Exam.
Well, usually if you have one of the prime classes, it seems like then, your choice of classes, like you don't have, it's not early, it's not on Friday.
Yeah.
If you have a Tuesday, Thursday, like 11 o'clock class, they like to make that final be one of the last ones.
My understanding is that a lot of the in-person exam finals have really fallen out of fashion here at Auburn as far as now it's a lot like the vast majority of the work and there's take-home stuff too where it's like a lot of the kids didn't even have anything in that exam window. All the coursework was already completed, and they don't take a final, or they, and I don't know, maybe it's the grumpy old man in me, Bill, but I'd say you get your blue book and your Ticonderoga number two pencils, and you're gonna
two pencils to erase.
We got the sharpener on the wall if you need to go
raise your hand.
Hand crank.
Man, yeah. you've got some kids going. What are you talking about?
And you're gonna I think there's something to be said for.
Close your book.
Do you retain anything?
Show me that you understand the course material that we covered this semester.
There is something to that. I did grasp a little of it.
And I don't know if I trust it if you type it because of the different means available to I'm not anti-technology or anything like that. Like I love the the conveniences of modern life. Sure, yeah, I'm pro indoor plumbing.
Yeah,
I can understand why that's more of a concern apparently than ever before. Dishonesty and your plagiarism and stuff like that. And I would just break out the Kelly Blue Books and the pencils. But
time's up.
But congratulations to all the Auburn graduates.
Yep.
And hopefully. Hopefully ceremonies go off without a hitch over the weekends. I know a lot of people work really hard on those graduation ceremonies that are going on.
Yeah,
it's like a parade, right, Bill? It's military precision.
You got to keep that thing moving.
Absolutely, for two straight days.
Yeah,
and so good luck to everybody getting their degrees and everybody in charge of that the ceremonies.
I'd like weekend. To have a dollar for every picture I've seen being taken down around Toomer's Corner the last 3 weeks.
Oh, sure. That sign?
Cool. Usually the university yeah. sign, yeah. Yeah. That is the most popular.
And I stood there, place. Too, with my son. So.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
All right, 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We've got a little time. Let's let you hear some of the comments from Butch Thompson.
Yeah.
Spent a little time with the media yesterday previewing the matchup against South Carolina, which gets underway in a little over in half an hour.
Yeah, it seems like we got here quick to our last regular season SEC home series, and I think there'll only be one more additional game maybe next Tuesday against Jacksonville State. So week 9 of SEC play, we host South Carolina Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I know we have a graduation ceremony on Thursday for some guys, and then a senior day be highlighted and honoring those guys on Friday. I'm gonna say these names because these guys have been so important to me in the program. Graduation ceremonies: John Armstrong, Parker Carlson, Derek Fabian, Ike Irish, Connor McBride, Cooper McMurray, Carson Myers, Ben Shore, and then the senior day deal will be Fabian, Shore, Sam Dutton, Carlson, Myers, McBride, and Armstrong. And then our managers have been amazing. We're losing a large group of managers, and anybody that's played college athletics or been around any college programs know that they're the heartbeat, the servants, and never get enough credit, but our guys have been instrumental. They're going on, and they're going to be leading companies. We got a pilot recently, and I just think them serving our program is great for them to build up some work ethic and learn how to work hard and do some things, and they've served our program well, so we'll honor those guys as well. Ethan Cornelius, Jay Holly, Cole Kehoe, Peyton Sauer with analytics, and Quinn Stromberg, who will be going to be a grad assistant with Old Dominion next year in their baseball program. It's pretty cool. And then the senior day include Bryce Decker to that group. So looking forward to playing Coach Maneri. It's been a few years playing him. I think he was absent for 3 years, but I think he's the winningest active head coach in college baseball. And he's at a storied program in South Carolina. So I see those guys probably in a very similar situation where we were last year, and we won our last two series last year. We'll see. They've had some guys out that's made a huge impact. I think about Petrie, the power hitter, is one of the best sluggers the last couple of years in the Southeastern Conference. If he continues to be out, that's definitely a challenge. I think we might see two left-handed starters. That's a challenge for our group because we're so left-handed. We'll see a low three-quarter right-handed pitcher in Stone for game one, who won against Ole Miss a few weeks ago, watching some tape of that. They field it. I thought that's been an advantage for us just overall defensively the last 2 weeks. But I think they're above 970 fielding as a team, so they're pretty buttoned up from that category. We got to find some ways to be successful and come out and continue to try to play hard. What's the old adage? It's not the water in the boat that gets you in trouble. It's the water inside the boat. That was a tough series for us that we just played, and now we're starting with the Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. And the time we spent in a dugout and on a field last weekend is longer than normal. And we started exams on Monday, and we're coming back off the road. So I'm more worried about our team, to be honest with you. We feel like we're at a little bit of a crossroads to where we do an assessment on Monday following, get back in the weight room, and we do some hydration tests. We do weight to see what happened after playing a series, and we do some measurements of jumping to just try to test where they're at, how their body is, and we're at some lows over the last 6 weeks. So Monday was just in the weight room. Tuesday we barely did some stuff and some live at-bats yesterday. We'll try to get to a decent practice today. But I'm more worried about our program and our players being able to recycle for a series when it looks like some of the good assessments that our guys do it's at a point to where it's adjusted some of our work this week, and understandably. their sleep's probably thrown off too, of trying to get back and get into exams and finish. And some of our guys will be, you know, finishing exams Friday morning after we play a game and before game two. But every team has to go through this, and every team has exams. It just happens to be our week, and we're monitoring it closely to try to get them to finish strong in the classroom. But for this series, I think it's about how we can turn our bodies around and get back into this series.
What's your message to the team in regards to there's opportunities out there at Hillsborough Regional, maybe even move up to Super Regional, but you also know you're not a team that can just show up in one series?
Yeah. We started a journey of really trying to put this book in around the last 3 weeks. So that started for us last week on the road, those four games. I don't think it's who we play. I think it's how we play. I think every team in our league is equipped to be able to create challenges for you and to beat you in a game of baseball. Just the game of baseball by design always gives the other fella a chance. So just like every weekend we've played, I don't think there's going to be a big difference in talent level and skill level that's on the field. And I thought we played our hearts out last week. That needs to continue for two more weeks. And we can play our hearts out and not win, I guess I should say. But it's at least this time last year it was in our control. This year it's in our control. So that's a step. And then you go get whatever you can get when you have a chance to get it. So I'd be shocked. We've been talking about consistency. We've been talking about, Twitter's not going to put you in a regional. I don't even know the forecast and stuff that's drifted down to me. None of that's worth anything it's written on. It's worthless until you play these last two weekends. It's like you want to win a baseball game, but you can't win the ninth till you get there. You can't win till they get to that pitch and stage of the ball game. So I don't feel like we've done anything. I look at where we're positioned in the league. We have so much work to do. There should be no reason whatsoever to slow down, stop, and not keep trying to, be successful every time you step on the field. So for what's out there and what's projected, that's not what a team and a baseball team should be, having any mindset over. Our deal is whatever we can put into this game tomorrow night. And for me, all I think about right now in this world is getting these guys recycled the best we can to help them get back out there to put their best foot forward tomorrow.
So. Twitter doesn't get you in a Twitter doesn't get you to host a regional.
Well, I mentioned it yesterday. I mean, this team has been so good at just focusing on the next game.
Yeah.
It's getting close, though, and you're hearing more, and there's no question the players are hearing it, and they're seeing it, and they're reading it. Everybody already projecting what's going to happen. What Butch does not want is for them to start looking ahead and thinking about a regional and going out and laying an egg against South Carolina.
You need to be at your best this weekend and next weekend, and if you're focused on other things, that may not be the case. Coach, did you ever find that, like, if you had a big game in 2 weeks and a game before that, like it was tough to keep out the noise about that big game, and keep that from creeping into your thought about this, about the upcoming game?
Yeah, no doubt. Lucky for my age, we didn't have a lot of the social media that we have now. And I really believe this was to our advantage here at Auburn. When I was here, we played Georgia, then Alabama. Mm. So if we were looking ahead, Georgia might hang 100 on us. I know it was two tough back-to-back games. We don't do it anymore. I think that helped us to focus. Okay, we got a big, tough game with Georgia. Let's take care of that now. Iron Bowl week. That takes care of itself. But, yeah, you're right. Nowadays, I don't know how they do it. Everything's on – everything. They read, hear everything.
You can't avoid it these days. I mean, it's sort of like I don't know how many folks have asked me how big the – and we've talked about this, Dan. I mean, how big the opening game against Baylor is.
Oh, jeez.
But when you've got a team – and I said, some of it depends on how you feel about your team.
Right.
If you feel like you've got a team that's got a chance to compete – you don't mind playing a team, finding out, let's go ahead and see. Now, you lose it, you're in trouble. But I think Auburn has the ability, they've got the team, the players, to be able to go to Waco and beat Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
But if you lose a game like that early on with games at Texas A&M, at Oklahoma, and then Georgia all in the next 5 weeks, hey, that's big. But it might be something that could help you during the summer and leading up to the start of the season to have a game like that to start.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say the same thing. You know, the year we opened at Southern Cal, that gets their attention, even though we weren't successful. I agree with you, Bill. If we were playing, say, just a normal team, or
well, if you're,
you know,
playing
a
teams,
lower
you're playing
team,
the weeks 2 and 3.
Right. Then it's, you know, but if you put that sign up, Baylor, you know, big conference who's been pretty successful lately.
Yeah.
We're a tough place to play, and a road game.
Mm-hmm.
And an earlier game. Everybody's going to be watching.
Yeah, I know Mark Schlabaugh did a preseason top 25 earlier today for like the upcoming college football season, and I think he had Baylor ranked in his top 25, and there are folks who think they could be one of the picks to win the Big 12 this year. So it'll be, and the fact that it's on a Friday night, and it's probably going to be, I haven't looked at the schedule, but I think it's the marquee game of that Friday night, you know, to open college football weekend. So I mean, it's different. It's certainly different than playing a paycheck game on Saturday afternoon, right? Like it's gonna, your preparation is different. You know, and if you know, and in the past when you've played a paycheck game on Saturday afternoon, and then a week later you've had a game against a major conference opponent, you know, like of late Auburn's had that Cal game in week 2, they had Penn State early before that. Like, how much of your preparation early was actually focused on that week 2 opponent versus the paycheck game? You don't have to, there's no veil this time of, oh well, we're getting ready for the FCS opponent, but you're getting ready for Baylor. Like you're getting ready for that.
You're not spending any time getting ready for somebody else.
No, and if the first two games were reversed, right, and Auburn were playing South Alabama or Kent State, whoever the week 2 opponent is, like if Auburn were playing them to open the season and then going to Baylor, I still think they'd be spending a lot of that early prep. I think they'd be spending a lot of time on Baylor. Yeah. Instead, they're just going to be.
I don't see Baylor or Auburn in Schlabaugh's.
Oh, is that right? 25. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought Baylor was ranked, but apparently not.
Yeah, I was just looking through it, seeing it's an interesting one. We can talk about that when we come back. But we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Six, seven, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn, and we were talking about another one of the early season, preseason, not even early season, it is a very early preseason football poll. Mark Schlabaugh of ESPN with his preseason top 25. And, it's interesting. This would be, and obviously there are going to be changes. It's not going to be these top 12. But it's fun when you look at this and go, this would be a really interesting playoff with these teams. I mean, there's some teams that you're used to seeing there, but maybe not exactly in the position where they have them. Schlabaugh's got Penn State as his preseason number one team right now. Clemson at number two.
And those are two, I think you look at the best teams in college football from last year, those are two that return their quarterbacks.
Right.
Like, I think that you look at some of the common threads of some of the other teams around. Like, I mean, obviously, you have every reason to believe Ohio State's going to be good. Georgia's going to be good. Alabama's going to be good. Texas is going to be good. And I'm sure these teams are represented pretty early in the Schlabaugh top 25. But if you're wondering what would maybe separate Penn State and Clemson from the rest of the pack right now, it might be that it's a little bit easier to project those teams because they don't have the question mark at quarterback that a lot of the other teams do.
Yeah, I mean, so
I think a lot of the optimism for LSU is based around the fact that people think
Nussmeier.
People think Nussmeier is a superstar.
Yep. Well, Texas, I mean, a lot of the optimism there is Arch Manning.
Sure.
Yeah. And Texas is his preseason number three. Georgia is number four, and you got to see Gunnar Stockton a little down the stretch.
I think that's almost a, like, if you believe
that's
that
a system kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, replacement
the
level
program,
and
right.
nothing against how Stetson Bennett or Carson Beck performed, mm-hmm. but it's almost a belief that a replacement level quarterback is going to be boosted by
cost them.
Yeah,
and, that a quarterback is going to be fine with Georgia because of the other talent that's around him, especially on defense.
And I think there's probably some of that with Alabama as well.
It's a little different. Because of Kalen DeBoer, and you still don't know exactly what to expect, and I think that sort of is indicated in where he has Alabama. He's got Alabama at number 9. Mm-hmm. Ohio State is 5. LSU 6, as we mentioned, with Garrett Nussmeier back.
That's very bullish on LSU.
That really is.
I mean, and you know, they could live up to it, but
their defense had better live up to it this year.
They had some baffling.
They don't live up to it this year. Brian Kelly is not going to be welcomed by all the LSU fans. Right.
They've had some baffling moments in his tenure.
Their defense has to be so much better.
Their defense has been so un-LSU.
Yes, I'm shocked. I'm shocked. The D lineman, that used to be LSU.
Yeah, you're
My
not kidding.
Goodness.
And
do they
and
open? They have a big one, don't they? Early. For some reason, I thought LSU had a pretty titanic early season game. They play Clemson opening weekend.
Yeah,
LSU.
That is pretty big.
LSU and Clemson. That game is in Death Valley. They're going to Clemson.
Wow. Yes.
On Saturday night.
August 30th.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly's former school, Notre Dame, is number 7. Then Oregon 8. Alabama, as I said, number 9. And then BYU rounding out the top 10. Now, you pay attention to more than 10 now with a 12-team playoff. Illinois is number 11 and Arizona State number 12. We were looking at this going, all right, so your top seeds at least for one more year, your conference champs are going to be the top 4 seeds.
Right.
So you would have
I think BYU is his highest ranked Big 12 team.
Yeah, I believe
and that,
so.
That would be so it's his it top be, 3 were
Penn State, Clemson, and Texas.
Right, and then BYU would be four. He doesn't have a group of 5 team.
I don't think there's a group of 5 team in his top 25.
See, you can't do like a clean like postseason projection. Tell you the other SEC teams in his top 25 when you get outside the top 12. A lot of folks. I think it also has to do with quarterback.
Yep.
A lot of folks love South Carolina.
Lenora Sellers and South Carolina are number 13. In Schlaybaugh's preseason,
I mean, they were 9-3 in the regular season last year, same as Alabama, same as Ole Miss. You know, on the bubble for the college football playoff, and we'll see what they can do to follow that up.
The next highest SEC team is number 19, and that is Florida.
Yeah,
with DJ Lagway.
A lot of people, and again, we're getting back to quarterback here, where it's like the easiest thing to point out is folks love Florida because the potential for Lagway seems off the charts.
Right,
like maybe he's not the best quarterback in the league this season because Nussmeier has more experience. Arch Manning has that incredible team around him, and the potential there. You even saw a little bit more from Sellers last year than you saw from Lagway. But would anyone be all that surprised if DJ Lagway went out there and looked like the best quarterback in the SEC? I mean, the guy is the potential.
He had some moments.
He had the moments that made you think he could be that guy. And I think a lot of the optimism around Florida is based on that potential.
And then the final 3 teams in his top 25 are SEC teams: Texas A&M 23, Ole Miss 24, and Oklahoma 25.
Auburn goes to A&M and Oklahoma in their first 5 games mm-hmm. of the season, and you want to be like, I don't want to be unreasonable, so it's like On one hand, I think losing all three of those road games, Baylor, A&M, and Oklahoma, would be a disastrous start to year three for Hugh Freeze. If you're looking at 2-3 when Georgia comes to town. At the same time, like, and you know, because, and I think in part that because they feel like you can compete in all three of those mm-hmm. games.
But you're right. At the same time, how
fair is it to expect?
How fair is it to expect to go on the road to a top 25 team and win?
Yeah, and so
when
it's
you're not.
I mean, I think if Auburn can. If Auburn can go, and here's the thing, I don't even know what the Baylor game truly means, because if you beat Baylor,
I think you need to beat Baylor just to avoid a really really rough start.
See, I think that if you'd love to have the Baylor game,
you beat Baylor and then you go 1-2 in the two road games and Georgia, then you've got to you're 4-2.
See, I would say. And leave the Baylor game aside for a second. If you beat Baylor and go 0-3 to start conference play, the fact that you beat Baylor is not going to save you.
No, it's not going to save
you. So
but,
I would.
But it's sure better than being 2-4.
It's better than being 2-4. But you're still looking at 3-3, right? I would say that
you're 0-3 in the conference.
Like regardless of what happens in the Baylor game, one of those A&M, Oklahoma, or Georgia games.
You need to win at least one of those.
Yeah, and I think that's regardless of if you beat Baylor or if you don't.
But what I'm saying is if you beat Baylor, you're 4-2 and you're set for a pretty good set for a pretty good second half.
Now
if you're 3-3, you're still like not really sure, and you're 0-3 in the conference.
Now what if
that's why I think you really need to win one of those three.
You need to win one of those three. And what if you have the zonk behind the curtain, Bill, if you're 2-4 after the Georgia game. It's going to feel like and even though there are some winnable games on the horizon seemingly after
games.
Georgia,
but how's the team's mindset going to be?
Yeah,
if you're 0-3 in the conference.
Yep.
Again, it's all about those three games.
I agree.
I mean, but Baylor would it would still be a bad taste in your mouth to start the season with a loss.
Baylor's an early test,
yep.
But the exam. Is those three games, and that's where and if you know don't roll snake eyes.
I don't want to call it like we've heard it called the preseason. Remember how fans have taken used to take to that.
Yeah.
But it
could be. I mean, for the winner of that game, it could be a very important game for the postseason.
Oh yeah, you're
like
right.
Both of those. If things go well. Those teams could be competitors and you know be on the bubble or even better. But yeah, I mean that three game stretch of conference games, Bill. Like once you get into A&M, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma's first, right?
You know, I don't even know.
I think it's Oklahoma then A&M.
I know. Yeah, I know it's those three. I know Georgia is after those two on the road. I was thinking Oklahoma first.
Right, but those
it is.
It's Oklahoma first.
Yeah.
I mean that
September 20th.
Yeah,
and then A&M the 27th, then open Dayton, Georgia.
Yeah, those are. I mean, it feels like you have to have one of those three. I agree with you.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in if you'd like 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros, Russell Dewey.